Welcome to the podcast. It has been 8,497 days since 9/11/2001, and we are coming at ya every fucking day with new content, new podcasts, new buses, new trains, new material, baby. We're riffing, we're spiffing, we're having a good time. Welcome to the cast, Lucas.
Welcome. General public to the podcast. It has been 7 days since our last transmission, or at least last recording.
I realize I should have done it's been 8,000 days since 9/11, and it's only 500 days until Shrek 5.
Yes, it is important that we keep the Shrek 5 countdown rolling.
It's, you know, we gotta keep people centered. Gotta keep people grounded in history.
Yeah, and looking forward to, I can't think of anything better to look forward to than the release of Shrek 5.
You don't seem as on board as I am.
I mean, you are. I mean, you're leading the charge on Shrek 5.
I think it's like the seminal text of the 21st century.
Yeah. It may be the last feature film.
Oh my God. After a certain point, I hope they only make Shreks. I'm so tired of new movies.
Mm-hmm. We went and saw the new Lord of the Rings movie, The War of Rohirrim. It was okay.
There's a new Lord of the Rings film? Post-Hobbit?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, it's set hundreds of years before The Hobbit. We have the King of Rohan, Helm Hammerhand, voiced by Brian Cox. And sort of the origin story of why they call it Helm's Deep. And it's a beautiful film, really beautiful animation. Text, you know, story I thought was a little, maybe basic. I wanted a little bit more, but really enjoyed it. Would recommend it. It's no Shrek 5.
No, I feel like if you're going to milk, you know, if you're going to do that Hollywood thing where you just take something people love and then you milk it for all it's worth, you should at least be forced to make a sequel because it's harder to maintain, like, consistency.
Yeah.
You know, it's like in a sitcom, they call it the book, but it's like the lore of the world, and you have to try to maintain, you know, some degree of accuracy.
Well, and there is, and with the Tolkien, there's the Silmarillion, I believe is what it's called. And it is like the history of Middle Earth, and that is where this text came from. But of course, they're also making Rings of Power, and yeah.
That sounds dope. Yeah. That sounds pretty dope. I can get on board with that. Someone was asking me if I had seen my girlfriend was asking me if I wanted to go see the new Joker movie, the new Joaquin Phoenix, and I said, why would I want to go see the new Joaquin Phoenix Joker movie? And she said, I don't know, Joaquin Phoenix is pretty good. She's not wrong, but I don't know. I said, it's like ever since The Dark Knight came out, we've been doing this whole like moody Batman thing. And I, whenever I see Batman, I think of Adam West, and it's and like pow, kablam, you know.
Yeah.
And it's just I'm so fed up with Heath Ledger Suicide Riddler content.
Yeah,
Christopher Nolan did it well, right?
Yeah. I mean, you know me. It's definitely not my genre of film. And yeah, I think our obsession with the Joker is really fascinating. But I haven't seen the original Joaquin Phoenix Joker movie. I've really stayed away from Joker content.
You're more of a Jokic guy.
Yeah. That's my Joker. Hashtag not my Joker.
For the folks at home, Lucas does love basketball.
Yes, I do. I've been getting more into it the last couple of years. I won my fantasy basketball game this week. It was a tough one, you know, with the play-in or with the mid-season tournament. My teams didn't have as many games, and they were sort of hard to predict when my players might be playing, but I was able to squeak out a victory. My wife works at a restaurant some of the time, and Russell Westbrook came in the other night, so that was pretty cool.
Russ.
That's pretty great. She she reached out to me and she said, Russell Wainwright's coming into Garden Grace. And I said, who? Do you mean Russell Westbrook or
Rufus
do you mean
Wainwright.
Rufus Wainwright? And it was Russell Westbrook.
That's so
Although,
sick.
I feel
I'd
like...
I'd rather it be Russell Westbrook than Rufus Wainwright.
Me too. I do think that if I sat down for dinner with Russell Westbrook and Rufus Wainwright, I would sort of be the perfect person to bridge the gap between them. I feel like I could moderate a discussion between the two of them very well.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, man, you could bridge the cultures. You could bridge the cultural gap.
And I will. And we will.
Welcome to the podcast.
I feel like we definitely need some sound effects, but
We need an intro. We need a theme song.
We do.
Have you considered this?
We need lots of stuff. But I think I'm on board. I've like swallowed my annoyance at Are You Into Bus Stuff? I think we should roll with that title.
There's no more powerful feeling than posting about boy pussy on LinkedIn. my dad DM'd me and he's like, are you okay? Cause no, I mean, we cut this last episode last week. I didn't edit it at all. I called it Electric Bussy and I immediately shared it to LinkedIn. And that is the energy that this podcast is trying to maintain. Lucas is along for the ride.
It's true. I sort of can't believe that I'm doing this, but I do think that it's important. I think that, you know, I've listened back to both of the last couple episodes, and you know, you and I have been talking about doing something like this for a really long time, and now that our interests have really centered around you know, urban planning and city living and making the world, or trying to make the world, a more livable place, I do think that it's a good thing. And if we can talk about boy pussy on the way, I mean, more the merrier.
Yeah, no, it's I don't know, it's the gays love cities, and people who live in cities love public transportation. Mm-hmm. So it just works out that way. The intersection of like transit culture and gay culture is abundant.
It's true. I mean, that's an interesting, you know, point to raise about, you know, the history of the development of gay culture. And that, I mean, it did happen in cities. Jane Jacobs, of course, who, you know, is best known for the life and death of great American cities. Wonderful book. If you haven't read it, definitely pick it up. She also has a book called The Economy of Cities, in which she posits a new hypothesis that it wasn't agricultural conglomeration that necessarily led to the development of cities. It was the development of cities that led to the agricultural advancements, the technological advancements, the linguistic advancements that spurred on the agricultural revolution, and then it was like a positive feedback loop of you know, city growth and civilization expansion. It's a really interesting, I mean, it's a very thick book. She talks about, you know, like what it would be to be an ox trader in, you know, Ur in the Euphrates Valley, you know, 3,000 years ago, 5,000 years ago. It's super fascinating, but one of the central messages of the book is that innovations are always developed in cities, because cities are where people come together and challenge each other and collaborate and come up with new ideas and have conflict to the point where they have to invent new ideas to resolve that conflict. And those innovations are always exported to rural areas. It's not the other way around. And even from the very beginning of civilization, it was cities and it was conglomerations of cities that caused, you know, the advancements that brought civilization to be. And I think the same is true of gay culture.
That makes it all the more tragic that, like, you know, we've destroyed our cities. We've spent so much of the 20th century isolating ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
Just sad. You know, because we all experience. I don't know if you grew up in the West, you experience this sort of fundamentally isolating. It's just fundamentally isolating, is what it is. Everything is private property. Everything is private. Public space is a punishment. Like,
or even where the public space is, you know, maybe less terrible than a punishment, it's still so banal and empty that it's not to call it public is almost, I think, a misnomer.
I mean, but it is public. I spend so much time in dead urban space, like parking lots and sidewalks along busy roads and dusty construction sites, and it's just all dead space.
It's definitely public space, but because it's dead, because it's without use for human beings, because so much of the use is sacrificed to automobiles, it doesn't give us what public space used to give us. It doesn't serve the purposes that public space does, you know, as being a forum and being a meeting place.
No, I mean, yeah. Bingo. Bingo.
And then there's all this discourse about third places, which I think is true. It's just such a bleak way of seeing the world, right? It's such a capitalistic, it's a way to make sense of a capitalistic world where, you know, you have your house, you have your work, and then you have a third space, whether that's a theater, a church, a restaurant, a coffee shop, whatever. I feel like it's just such a limiting way to think about things. And if it helps people to think about cities in a different way and maybe try to focus on living in a more sustainable way by being able to walk or bike or public transit to their third spaces, quote unquote, that's great. But for me, it's sad that we can only plan for a third space. Shouldn't the whole city be our third space?
No, because we've decided that streets are for cars.
Right. But it's like,
no, I mean, yeah, you should be allowed to play in the street. Streets are for fucking around and riding bikes and playing baseball and, you know, streets are having fun. It's like you just see how much fun people have when there's no cars in a street, and it's like, God damn, that's so much more fun than the world we live in. Yeah, and it's so close, you could like taste it, but it's not a reality. It's instead just a constant drone of noise pollution and generalized violence towards the environment.
Yeah.
People have this conceptual framework of streets for cars. It's like, well, this is my access. This is my freedom. Mm-hmm. And it's like, well, this is freedom for well-to-do people. And then it is exclusive of, it is a barrier to everything else. All of God's creatures, including poor people. Well, I honestly really need to dig into the Roadway Report data on just race and pedestrian deaths, because I think they started tracking it in 1999. And we know that, like, black and low-income neighborhoods have a higher incidence of pedestrian fatality. And I don't think it's unsafe to say. I can't back this up, but I need to go and verify that the actual pedestrian fatalities themselves are skewed towards, like, African-American and low-income people in this country. Because they obviously are, right? It's like,
well, I mean,
who's walking on the side of, like, these shitty roads? It's not people who make $80,000 a year.
Yeah. I live in Denver, which is an extremely white place by the numbers, and I'm frequently on the bus, the only white person, or definitely in the minority as a white person. So what does that tell you? You know, I'm in a city that's 85-90% white. It might not be that high, but it's extremely high. But on the bus, I'm in the minority. When I'm waiting for the bus, when I'm walking down the street, I'm in the minority. There's definitely something there. I mean, it's just, it's part of, I'm going to say it, critical race theory, that all of our systems that negatively impact some of the population disproportionately impact black and brown people. It's just the way that we built it.
Yeah, and it's like, it's, you know, if you really dig into, you know, each individual highway construction project, right? It's like some of them were, yeah, it's some of them were explicitly to get rid of a place.
Mm-hmm.
How many urban renewal projects did we do in this country?
That's a great question. I would think segregation by design is probably the best. If I go to...
Because if I look up urban renewal in the Austin ledgers, so to speak, I don't know, there's probably like 100 documents spanning from the 50s to the 80s.
Yeah. And there were segregation by design, which, if listeners, if you have not gone to that website, segregationbydesign.com, check it out. It has one of the most comprehensive catalogs of urban renewal and freeway expansion projects online, incredible visualizations. It's just great work. But they have a list of cities to be covered, and they're, you know, working through the catalog. So if we assume that, you know, from your numbers that there's 100 for every city, and that's probably on the low end. I've got 1, 2, 3, 4. I mean, I could, it's going to take me a while. There's at least 160 cities that went through in the 40s, redlined the cities, drew the new maps, and then knocked down neighborhoods for urban renewal projects and freeways.
Yeah, so, Austin's is uniquely fucked up. I mean, maybe it's not. Maybe it's actually, we had a pretty standard one. But like, I don't know. They invented zoning in 1925 or something. But by 1929, we had implemented it in Austin. And we had started to uproot black institutions all over the city and try to force them to the east side. Basically just like move everybody's churches and schools to a small... small area at like 12th and Chicon. Rosewood. But there were a handful of Freedman communities on the west side. They weren't massive.
Mm-hmm.
But they were old. They were old as fuck.
Denver was always a city built by white Yankees for white Yankees. And that doesn't mean there weren't people of color throughout the history, but, you know, in 1880, a white mob of drunken men burned down the entire Chinese community and lynched a young man, strung him up in the street, and sent a pretty clear message about who Denver was for.
Austin was like 45% black after the Civil War.
Right. We didn't have that history here.
What are we at today? Something like 3-5%.
There it
is. So like we've done all the gentrifying we can do.
Well, that's not necessarily true. Gentrification is not necessarily just about race.
But it's like we have not, like, literally decimated the community that was here with, really starting with, I would argue, Jim Crow in like, we're really getting into business in like the 20s.
Yeah. So I just sent you a link in the chat, which is a resource that the University of Richmond hosts, and it's called Mapping Inequality, Redlining in New Deal America. And you can go to your own city, You can click on Austin, and it'll show you that some of the original redlining maps. Yeah, and I mean, one of the first things that they list is the Austin, Texas black population. In 1860, right after the Civil War, yeah, 36%, according to this.
Well, there you go.
And one of the, if you go to some of the redlined communities, if you click on, it's a little funky.
Where am I clicking?
Where are you at? Are you on the map?
What map?
It says explore the maps is probably the first thing you want to click. You can see.
Oh, wow. This is dank. This
isn't it great?
Is excellent.
Yes.
What a sexy way to use historical maps.
Yep.
That's brilliant.
Yep. You can see, if you see the context tab in the Austin page, you can see they've put together a map as well of racial restricted covenants from 1890 to 1950. And this is one of the most important pieces of the history of redlining and the history of displacement and gentrification. It was the fact that, you know, I mean, I've gotten into arguments with people, you know, kind of playing devil's advocate. And, you know, I'll say, well, you know, these neighborhoods were literally redlined. You weren't allowed to, you couldn't get a loan for a new home. You couldn't get a loan to improve your current home. So anyone that had money left because they were able to, but people of color were unable to leave into these new developing areas because there were racial covenants. You weren't allowed to be black in a lot of these neighborhoods. And seeing that visualized and seeing where, you know, the historic neighborhoods are and where they were not allowed to be displaced to, like, those two things working together is the history of our cities for me. Like, that's one of the core.
Okay, so I'm looking at where the small black enclave was in West Campus.
I guess it
was called Wheatville. But so it's north of 24th and then west of San Gabriel.
Right on
that's
the
just that little,
on the water there.
Yeah. And
on the
so
creek.
That was crushed. And I guess there was another enclave of undesirables. I don't know. It's like it's not always black people. It could have been like Polish people or something.
Mm-hmm.
But there's more people up at like 34th Street.
Yeah. It's interesting.
Whoever wasn't white enough to make the cut. Because it's like, I don't know, this Mexican neighborhood, the Holly neighborhood, is listed as definitely declining, but it's not hazardous, like the whole black area is.
Yeah.
So I guess that maybe it was a black enclave at 34th Street. It's like where Kirby Lane Cafe is, the original,
yeah.
for the folks at home. It's really weird to look at this, because these streets are the streets that I ride my bike on every day. Like this, you know, it's like I'm looking at a map of like my area as redlined way back in the day. It's kind of tripping me out.
Yep. I'm looking now at
this
area.
This whole map is like, this is fucked up. This is like all the places I can bike. Like this whole this whole map is like my bike radius, basically.
Yep.
East Austin, downtown, Hyde Park, West Campus, Clarksville. That's it.
Yep.
The 04. I can go to South Congress if I need to. And I guess there were some.
Austin doesn't have as many area descriptions. But if you go to another city, like if you go to Denver, you can see what they actually wrote in the clarifying descriptions during the redlining when they were writing the documents that, you know, caused this phenomena to occur.
Whoa, you guys have a good map. This is a lot of city.
Yep.
It's weird to see it superimposed on the rest of Denver, though. Like, yeah. So this is your bike radius. This
But
is
if you
like, this is so
go.
fucked up. It's like Jim Crow coincides. It's like, oh, we invented this, and then everything went to shit. It's like all the development after we invented this, like zoning and redlining, was is where you can't walk or ride a bike. So all these historic maps are like are during Jim Crow, basically, you know. And it's clearly not exclusive to the South.
Well, no,
This.
I mean these maps were drawn well after, I mean, well
Well, I
after the
mean, I would
beginning of Jim
consider
Crow.
zoning a Jim Crow law, basically. Like, I don't know how else to describe it. You know, it coincides with that era of public policy, and it is, it's like the thing that had the most profound effect on how we live our lives and our social circles and our communities.
I would say that redlining and urban renewal stands on the shoulders of Jim Crow and is a way of continuing to practice what Jim Crow was enforcing without actually enforcing Jim Crow. Because most of these maps were drawn in like the 30s and 40s. And after a period of a lot of urbanization and industrialization in the US. I would agree that they're directly related, but I would say that this is a sneaky secret thing that sits on top of Jim Crow. But I would say it's a distinctly different function. But splitting hairs.
Yeah.
If you go to the area D10 in Denver, which is north of the railroad tracks, it's basically in what you would now call Highlands, which is a pretty desirable area. There's a lot of scrapes over there in the last, number of years, a lot of new developments. You know, if you're getting into a single family house, you're spending at least $1 million today. But in area D10, when they drew this map, they wrote in clarifying remarks there was an infiltration of foreigners. And to clarify, the poorer Italians are concentrated in this area, which is an old
That's
cheap section.
hysterical.
There is
That's a
no demand for
that's a
property.
low blow.
The sparsely built up part of the area to the north is one of the small farms and gardens, a poor fourth grade section.
This is one of the coolest web maps I've ever seen.
Isn't it great? The ones in like New York and Chicago are really incredible.
Yeah, because it's like all of these laws are still like where people live. All of these laws are like, these are the most consequential. This is one of the most consequential things we've ever done
Yes.
as a society.
Yes. You can also, in the sort of main section of the website, instead of explore the maps, you can search, you can select search the area description. So if you were looking for area descriptions that included the word Irish or infiltration or unskilled labor, you can search all of these different terms to see where they were using this language. If I write, let's see, let's do Mexicans. Let's search that.
Wow, look at Milwaukee.
In area D19 in California, in Los Angeles, the clarifying remarks say population consists very largely of Mexicans of the peon type. And that is in, yeah, East LA.
If you look at the Milwaukee map, like the white zoned areas back in the day are the areas that today don't have any traffic deaths, and the hazardous and declining neighborhoods are where the people get hit by cars.
Yep.
That's so fucked up. We gotta talk about boy pussy more because I don't know if I could do this redlining stuff.
Yeah, no, I mean it's yeah, it's really something. It's really something.
Goodness gracious. This no, this is an incredible tool. How do we get the folks at home to see this? What do you Google? Mapping inequality, redlining in New Deal America?
And it's hosted by dsl.richmond.edu. We can put it in the show notes, but if you, I
Yeah, if you
believe
just
if
Google
you,
mapping inequality Richmond or mapping inequality New Deal America.
it takes you to the landing page for the map if you go to dsl.richmond.edu/panorama/redlining/map.
They should call it Raw Deal America. Am I right, folks?
Hey.
Ayo. Can't catch a break in this
Screw
country.
deal.
Oh my God. No, that's sad. I mean, that's big sad. Really, it's so sad that I can't even riff. And that's a problem, because we're podcasters.
Yeah. No, but it's a history that we weren't taught, but it is literally the codification of racism and white supremacy that has led us to a deeply dangerous and bleak urban reality. It is white supremacy that caused our bleak reality. And of course, that goes hand in hand with the exploitation of resources and the conspiracy between oil extraction, automobile manufacturing, real estate speculation, of course, like those are the functions, but the underlying philosophy is one of white supremacy. And when you read some of the comments and you look at some of these maps, it becomes extremely clear that our nation was reformed in the 40s, 50s, and 60s using urban renewal as a function of white supremacy.
Brilliantly put. No, I got as high as I could, and I kind of like rolled out of bed, and you came prepared with like a great thesis. I really appreciate your
It
commitment to the craft.
takes two, baby.
No, but I mean, fuck yeah, dude, you're spot on. It's a tragedy, you know, and really, we shouldn't have any patience for people who perpetuate these systems in the present day.
Well, and we have to deal with the cards that we currently have in our hands, which I think there's some hope in, because white flight was real and people moved to the suburbs, and now those people's children and those people's grandchildren, like you and me, we grew up in these sanitized suburban environments that we absolutely detest. And I think this is just a function of being human, right? Like you naturally rebel a little bit against the world that you're given and the ideas of the generation before you. And I think that's a good thing. But now we have this problem of, white millennials who come from these families that benefited from the system of redlining and expansion were able to reap the benefit of home ownership and the stability of wealth that that created. And now we are moving back into cities, into places that have had decades of disinvestment. And so, how do we deal with that? How do we go back to cities and live in a more sustainable and properly urban way without hurting those communities that have survived? I mean, it's been difficult in many urban communities over the last 60, 80 years, but those communities still exist and we can't enforce our political will on them, right?
Austin's history is just so different from the average American metropolitan area. It's like Austin just has a lot of money, and we don't have any poor people anymore because none of them can afford to live here. So we
Well, there's
don't
you.
really. Yeah, I'm poor as fuck. But no, it's like we don't really have a lot of the issues of like urban poverty. You know, Austin is like really safe. Everything is funded. You know, there's no potholes, right? They just, Austin has a lot of money. And that's just not true for most metros, right? Like, most places have the nice neighborhoods voting out of their boundaries and, you know, incorporating themselves and are just having a hard time funding basic maintenance.
Yeah.
So it's like, I don't know, you know, when I, our problems are just really different from most cities' problems.
Yeah, I would say that Denver is in a fairly similar place. One of my favorite local commentators, his name is Brother Jeff, calls this the Mile High Income City. And it's true. There's a legacy of real estate speculation that means a lot of people are essentially just like landed gentry in Denver. And there's also a lot of high paying jobs. There's a lot of oil and natural gas jobs. There's a lot of weapons manufacturing jobs. And Colorado, since European settlement, has been a haven for the wealthy. And, you know, Denver is the gateway to the mountains for those folks. They fly through DIA, unless they're super rich, and then they fly to the mountains. But we have a similar situation where the working class exists. I would say that there definitely are poor people in Denver. There's definitely poor people in Austin. But you're right. Go ahead.
No, I mean, they're just, they've been forced out. They've been forced out over like 100 years. Mm-hmm. The way a lot of people describe it on the east side is like, well, the taxes just kept going up, you know, and mm-hmm. I couldn't. Eventually, everybody's got to downsize. And so we're just at the point where Austin adds like 50,000 rich people every year. Mm-hmm. And the number of poor people stays roughly the same.
Right.
But so as a percentage, we feel the squeeze in such an intense way.
I mean, Austin in the last 15 years, Indeed, Google, who else? I mean, like all these huge employers that employ people at very high incomes because of the nature of the.
We have the Tesla headquarters.
Tesla?
Those wieners come into the restaurant and get gumbo. I hate them so much.
Yeah. Austin's also, you know, become a you know, wellness industry, and I'm using air quotes there because, you know, there's nothing more harmful than the wellness industry, but it's a haven for wellness industry influencers, misinformation.
Fuck, because jogging here kingpins. Fucking rocks. It's sunny. True. It's sunny 95% of the year.
Like it is hot.
Run. It's hot, but if you get up early, you can run every day.
Mm-hmm.
You can run every day. As somebody, as I got my Strava rewind for the year, and I worked out 300 out of 365 days last year.
Nice, man.
So, consistent. Austin, Texas. I might be broke, but they can't take my health. I did that myself.
Yeah, I mean, being in Austin recently, the air is so much cleaner than it is here in Denver. That's, I think, the biggest thing about Denver that continues to wear on me is the quality of the air.
Y'all have, like, fucking 3 times as many cars as we do.
Yep.
Especially in the central city. Austin has good bones, so it's like the central city is actually big, bikeable.
Mm-hmm. And, I mean, Denver, I feel like there is hope in the next 100 years, really. But our massive single grid that has been designed to move cars at high speeds is going to be a barrier. It's going to be a barrier. But it could work. I mean, there's some great urban fabric in Denver.
Yeah, it's like the thing about having like ample right of way and just these big ass over engineered fucking roads is that all we got to do is just, you know, make really sick bike lanes. I personally feel like the standard should be completely separated facilities. Like every sidewalk should just be like 15 feet. And then you don't need to build a bike lane.
Yeah, because people on bikes and people walking can share a space that wide.
And then you've got complete grade separation. You know, we can start doing raised crossings, more bollards, simple stuff. The cost per mile of like a 12-foot sidewalk is expensive, but it's still cheaper than what we're doing. Mm-hmm. Anything is cheaper than what we're doing. That's the sad part. What is the value of God and Earth?
That's a good question.
I saw a dead squirrel in the road yesterday, and I thought, that'll be me one day. Roadkill hits different when you're outside of a car. I gotta be honest with you people.
It's true.
You bussies at home in your Ford Escape. It's like, dude, I saw a pregnant possum in the street that had been hit by a car, and it's all of its little possum babies had crawled out into the street, and then each of them got hit by a car, and I heard them crunch. I was just trying to catch the fucking bus.
That's an image.
It was so grotesquely violent.
That's really rough.
And that is what we've done to the world. We dominate it. We crush it. We kill it. We destroy. We have license to kill. It's so cold and heartless that we're social creatures, right? So we just do whatever situation we as humans, our ability to like survive and stay alive comes from the fact that we're adaptable. And you know, we sort of just tend to accept, you know, the world that we find ourselves living in, even if that world is fundamentally violent.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway.
No, I mean, that's well put. And people don't think of it as violent because it doesn't, it's not predicated on ill will or aggression, because the automobile is powerful enough that you don't need those things to hurt someone else.
Good God.
I mean, if you think about just the mass accumulation, like if we take a huge step back and just think about the amount of matter, the mass that any individual human being possesses and is a part of their collective self, if you will. When you add a car, two cars, three cars, the exponent on the amount of space that a person is able to take up is just remarkable. And the fact that they can pilot those things through a densely populated area. Of course,
It is so dumb that we've done this to ourselves. Like, I always think about the WALL-E people, right? Because we're fat. Mm-hmm. You know, we create too much trash. WALL-E really, you know, WALL-E nailed it. It's a great movie. But even in the WALL-E universe, which is a satire on how dumb we are, they're still in electric wheelchairs. Like, cars are too dumb for them.
Do you think WALL-E will make an appearance in Shrek 5?
That would be sick. Pixar and DreamWorks crossover. Mm-hmm. AI crossover.
Mm-hmm.
There's
no cars in the Shrek universe, is there? Are there?
Yeah. No. No.
No, they ride in like carriages and stuff.
Yeah, but that's because Shrek is like old timey.
Wait, when do you think?
Maybe.
But there's also like Starbucks. Like in Shrek 2, there's like the.
Maybe in the fifth film there'll be an industrial shrevolution.
I hope so.
No, about boy pussy. I got nothing. I got nothing. I got no riffs. I got no riffs, and I have no prepared material about cities or transportation. I did some work this week updating the websites. So
Nice.
transit.observer, it will let you search any data from the National Transit Database on like bus hours, bus
Wow.
miles.
That's
So that goes
amazing.
up to 2023 now. And so we're you know, so you can see like, okay, Cleveland commuter bus, hours of service, and it'll show you dating back to 1991. So that's updated, and then
Yeah, I
census.
can see immediately the the big thing that we're talking about in Denver, which is that we can't get RTD ridership back to pre-pandemic levels. We were on a pretty solid increase, at least on the rail. And now, we're barely, at least, bus ridership, we're like half what we were in 2019.
Are you on the regular page, or are you on the pandemic recovery page?
I am on the regular page.
Let me see. I don't know if I
And
updated this. I think I did, because I was like, oh yeah. So if you go to pandemic recovery,
yeah, I see that. This is a great tool.
yeah, brada. Yeah, I pulled in the latest monthly data. So
Nice.
you guys, oh my God, you guys are riding like under 60% of your pre-pandemic level still, like as of September 2024. Yeah, man, this is actually a dank website. I don't give myself enough credit for this one.
This
Just
is
because no one actually uses it, right?
I
But
haven't
'cause
spent as much time on this one. This is great.
the saddest one is Jackson, Mississippi, because the paratransit, or the like the door-to-door disability service, which is mandated by the Americans with Disabilities Act, I think. I think they spend more on that now than fixed route bus service.
I mean, we're having
Or almost. Let's check, actually.
the RTD is definitely bleeding money because we've created so much access with accessoride type services. So they're trying to figure out how to keep it funded without cutting it because they legally can't.
So yeah, in Jackson, Mississippi, as of 2023, they spent $6 million on bus service and $5 million on microtransit. And the bus service had 400,000 riders, and the microtransit had 60,000 riders. So just
Wow,
think
look
about
at
that.
that. That's crazy.
And so it's like, you know, that's it's okay. Deep state here, deep state mind fuck coming right up. You got no prepared content, but this is what big disability doesn't want you to know. Handicap parking is a scam. Handicap parking is just more parking that gets in the way of people with disabilities, because it's like Car World just completely removes people with whole classes of disabilities from public space. Like, you can't, if the sidewalk is obstructed, you can't use the fucking sidewalk. You don't really want to go into the street. So like a lot of people with physical disabilities can't use public space. People with intellectual disabilities who may or may not be able to keep themselves out of the street can't use public space. Children can't use public space. So handicap parking, I'm sort of against it. Fuck cars. Hot take. You didn't see that one coming, did you? No, and then the other one is that the Americans with Disabilities Act has had, sort of in a roundabout way, some negative impact on transportation accessibility for people with disabilities. Because a lot of people with disabilities rely on fixed route service to have independent mobility. And in an instance like Jackson, Mississippi, where everybody is federally mandated to have access to like door-to-door service if they have a disability and would otherwise be able to take the bus, that mandate in the ADA is unfunded. So the municipal transportation agencies all over the country are legally required to provide this door-to-door service, the cost of which is ballooning. Mm-hmm. And so it's also at the point where it's like, okay, half of Jackson's fucking bus budget is going to this door-to-door service. It's serving a fifth as many people. It's like, that was never the purpose of this legislation. It was the purpose of this legislation was never to handicap the damn bus. So it's like, I would argue it's at a crisis point for some agencies. Austin, it's up to something like 15% to 20% of the budget, right? But the fact that it's half of Jackson's spending fucks me up.
Yeah.
On a daily basis.
Well, it also, I mean, the graph here and the reality that it represents speaks to the fact that the fixed route service must be inaccessible for folks to need to opt for door-to-door service.
Right.
It speaks to the greater failing of infrastructure in Jackson.
That is what Austin has been trying to do to improve our ratio, is that they've been trying to make sure every stop is accessible, which was true at one point, I think, in like the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
There's been a lot of people in Austin who have organized over the years for disability access on Cap Metro. That's why we have state-of-the-art shit. We have every bus has a ramp, and they spend a lot of money keeping the stops ADA accessible.
Mm-hmm. Sorry, I'm just looking at all these charts. It's really good stuff.
Yeah, transit.observer is where you can look at transit spending and performance for any agency in the United States. Roadway.report is an interactive map of every traffic death in America. And censusmaps.org is a little website where you can make quick density maps for different demographic characteristics for any American metro. Those are some of my web projects. Gooncave.com is where you can send donations to Ben and Lucas.
There's no way that you own that domain. That domain is too valuable.
Goon Cave. Ugh.
Roadway Report is an amazing tool. One of the things that I'm hoping to do with it is take some of the data in my neighborhood of roadway fatalities and compare the accident details and try to observe any correlations that might be present. I'm looking at one right now. You know, you get incredibly deep information. You get the VIN number on the vehicle. You get, you know, who was injured, who took part, the height and weight, often the race and gender of the victim. And if you know, listeners, go and find any relevant tragedies in your community, you can also add comments, you can share obituaries, add links and articles, to really honor the people, because, you know, we talk a lot, I know you and I, Ben, about the, you know, the tragedy of the situation, but it's really represented by individual tragedies of people dying every day, every hour, and we really need to honor those people.
Which I should be clear, there's nothing funny about traffic deaths. There's nothing funny about traffic deaths.
Yep.
This is Ben Carnero with Traffic Deaths Daily, coming at you with a random traffic death. We're going to find one. I'm going to roadway.report. I'm selecting the pedestrian death filter just so I can, you know, it's like, it's not the same if someone drunk drives into a tree, right? So I just say, you know, I want an innocent person. We're going to Houston. We're going to Montrose on Vaud Drive, Tuesday, April 9th, 2019. Let's see. Ooh, a pedal cyclist. Let's see. Was hit by a Mercedes-Benz sedan, four-door. Pedestrian or pedal cyclist in road. Okay, yeah, sure. She was 30. She was not tested for alcohol. Okay, let's see. Oh, the cyclist. That sucks. And then she was hit by a 76-year-old man.
Dang.
Who just fucking ran her over. There's no... Oh, I guess it says she failed to yield right-of-way at a sign-controlled intersection. She what came out the... right in front of me, I guess, is what the guy said.
She came out of nowhere. What's the intersection? Montrose?
It's at Willard Street and Wall Drive. W-A-U-G-H.
Willard and Wall. Okay. I'm throwing my street view down.
Yeah, me too.
Oh man, I mean, when did that death happen?
2019, right before the pandemic.
Gotcha. I mean, there's
There's the ghost bike.
Yep, there's the ghost bike right there, and there's some Kermit painted. I wonder if that was part of.
Hey, I mean, look, it looks like this got the treatment. Like, yeah. Yeah, bike lane. We got a bike lane now. All it took was some poor woman dying. Anyway, well, yeah, that's Pedestrian Deaths Daily. We'll stop doing the show when there are no longer Pedestrian Deaths Daily. Remember, there's nothing funny about traffic deaths. It's our sign-off.
Yeah. Yep.
Oh, my God.
Did I tell you about the ghost bike in Denver that someone got? There was a ghost bike put up on a street sign in Denver, and then someone else got killed at the exact same intersection like a couple weeks later, and then they added another ghost bike to that spot, and then both of the ghost bikes and the signs just got mauled down by a car.
Jesus Christ.
Like, the symbol got destroyed.
Yeah, but that's it's generally a design issue, right?
Yeah.
Hey, look, it says she was going with traffic, bro. That's fucking me up a little bit. So it's like cyclist in a traffic lane, traveling with traffic. It just said she failure to yield right of way. Who's to say she didn't have the right of way? Mm-hmm. Like, what the fuck? It says he just ran her down and then left. Oh, I mean, he didn't leave, but it's like no charges. Says the cop's like, well, not your fault. You just ran her over with your fucking car, you old bag.
She probably shouldn't have been in the road. We're going to let you keep your driver's license, old man.
76-year-old cuck. Yeah. I hope this is a good day.
And it's really in so close to the heart of the city, too. Like, this isn't happening in the suburbs. This is, like, pretty old urban fabric.
Right. There's no reason for this to be a one-way, two-lane road. Or what was, no. I imagine before it was a three-lane, one-way road, if I had to guess. In fact, can I toggle that?
Yeah, we should be able to. Wah and Willard.
You know, with the treatment, it remained two lanes. They just took 5 feet for a bike lane. Like, they kept it as two lanes. They just made them both 2 feet smaller.
Mm-hmm.
Pitiful, bro.
Was there any time in the Google
history when can we make it illegal? Can we please make it illegal to kill someone with your car? Like, for the love of God. 4 million. 4 million down. How many more to go?
Yep.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I think
if people are as into traffic safety as they are into gooning, maybe we'd have a fucking country.
I mean, it's the cars and the phones that have made our world.
Ever since Barack Obama made it illegal to goon, I can't catch a break.
You should take that up with the relevant authorities.
Podcasting's hard, man. You know, conceptually.
I mean, when it's your passion and you just bring so much to it, you know.
No, you understand. You understand.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Sometimes you just want to let loose, but you've got to remember to please the cabal.
Mm-hmm. It's true. All right. Well, I will I'll sign off here. I'm going to walk on over and get my hair cut later today and then meet a friend. I won't be using an automobile, so that'll be good. I've been spending a lot more time in an automobile for work. I actually drove around the suburbs for most of the week this last week. The person who usually drives was out, so I got to be the driver, and it's terrifying. It's not surprising that there are so many deaths and so many accidents and so many folks that just, you know, dislike the built environment. So stay safe out there. Take care of yourself.
Yeah, we'll do. I'm work tonight, tomorrow. And I don't know. I'm going to actually make probably some traffic death content. It's hard to do. Yeah. It's so hard to make memes about traffic deaths.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's my cross to bear.
Yeah, it is. I guess someone's got to do it.
So our sign off is, remember, there's nothing funny about traffic deaths. I think that's
you,
good.
You laughing through it out of context will definitely confuse people.
It's okay.
Like, I mean, if they listen to the whole episode.
That's the price. The price of admission to the goon cave is not knowing what's going on.
I hate you.
This is professional content. This is going straight to LinkedIn, baby.
Yeah, obviously. Obviously. LinkedIn is where this belongs.
My mom said I need to apologize to you for being so mean to you about losing your job.
I think
she
it's
said,
funny
you
that
don't
your
sound,
mom is listening.
You don't sound like a very good friend.
Well, that's okay. I appreciate it. Elizabeth, you've always been very sweet to me, and I can handle Ben's ribbing.
She's right. I should be nicer. I love you very much.
No, I know that. And I mean, hey, it's a story that I will tell, and it's a mistake I have to live with. So, you know, that's life.
Okay, I'll see you around, Gooner.
All right. Love you, buddy. I'll talk to you later.
Bye.